And now, the moment the whole world has been waiting for. Yes, it's time for the weather for Lincoln from Gibraltar with Gabriella Peralta.
It's going to be a lovely day today. Highs of 25 degrees centigrade, lows of 14 degrees centigrade. Another dry, sunny and very warm day.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
You know, once you've reached that level of perfection, Gabrielle, I feel we might as well just pack up and leave the rest of the show for the remaining, 1 hour and 58 minutes. I mean, why should we actually sort of go any further? You know, it's superbly delivered as ever. And what, pray tell, is the weather like in Gibraltar?
Today's sunny as well, bright, and it's probably, I think, about the same amount. Mm-hmm. I think it's about 24 degrees, 25 mm-hmm. degrees, so you might actually be on par with the rock weather.
Who'd have thought it, eh? Needless to say, even though it's just the two of us doing duties today because Ben is otherwise engaged, and the rest of the Midweek Drivettes, well, you know that sort of time where they're either completing the course, they've wrapped it up, they're preparing to go home, etc. So I thought, yeah, we'll be able to cope. How is Frodo?
Asleep at my feet.
All right. Significant.
Yeah, he's currently on my foot.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to kick him. You don't want to do anything else with that particular. Not that you would even think about that.
Now.
But exactly. So it's just he's literally kind of positioning himself to lock after the whole sort of process. Okay. Coming up on the program today, Richard Fitzwilliams, as ever, will be joining us. Did you know it's 100 years since the OBE, the Order of the British Empire, was introduced into the honours system?
No, I didn't know that. But it'll be interesting to see how many people have received an OBE in those 100 years.
All right, clearly, Gabriella, you haven't received yours as yet. Has it not arrived? Have you not been summoned to the palace? I mean, you know, good grief.
No, I think I need to actually do something first.
Yeah, but Gabriella, you know, every Thursday, without fail, 9:05 a.m. in Gibraltar time, 8:05 in the UK time, you're here, you're updating the world on how Frodo is, you're doing the weather forecast. If that doesn't merit an OBE, well, heaven's sake, what? Does, you know, goodness me, I mean, surely I would have thought it's got to be, you know, GPOBE. Oh yeah, see what we did there.
Yeah, that would actually be quite cool.
Exactly.
Not going to happen, but not anytime soon.
Never say never.
I need to live longer.
Well, no, clearly you might have just decided that, you know, it kind of is there, but you clearly, for reasons of protocol, you can't say anything, and that's perfectly understandable. In addition to that, he's going to be reviewing...
Courtney.
Yeah, well, this is it. He's going to be talking about Snatched, this is Richard Fitzwilliams, and Baywatch, a movie I never thought Richard would even consider reviewing, but it's the remake.
I know people are going to go watch it.
Really? In full
that's
red swimming like... costume?
No.
No,
they'll go in normal jeans and a T-shirt, I'm sure.
But surely they should actually, as they go to the cinema, they should actually rock up in slow motion and actually run along the Gibraltar beach. Do you have a beach in Gibraltar? I never really sort of...
We have lots of beaches.
That's all right.
We have at least 5, and we're only 3 kilometres long.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, clearly, just in case people were thinking it's just a rock, no, there's a beach that's there as well. Splendid. William Sitwell, I think, will be joining us too. And we'll be finding out a little bit more about actually getting out and about to cope with Alzheimer's and dementia and various other sort of challenges that we're faced with in the world today. Alan Stevens is also going to be joining us from the Forest of Dean, and there's going to be a whole heap of other goodies as well. Now, last week you shocked us, Gabriella, because as opposed to going to court, you were off to do various other things. In fact, you went to Gibraltar's Soul Museum.
Yes, I did.
So you've got
And they had a lovely open day, and they got 1,900 visitors on the Saturday, which was the most visitors they ever had on an open day. So it worked out quite well for them.
Can 1,900 people all fit on the Rock of Gibraltar at the same time? I mean, that sounds like
we've got 30,000.
Oh, well, that's all right. That's a reason.
Just population, but. Yeah, it's quite good for the museum.
And did I hear in the background the sound of an authentic motorist in Gibraltar honking their car horn?
Yeah, I live beside a road, so
the window's
open.
It's not sound effects. It's genuinely happening. It's not a case of the Gibraltarians are trying to wake up Frodo by honking their horn as they pass the Peralta residence. You know, it was just that. This is what award-winning radio is all about, really. I mean, I feel just getting that stage further forward. Anyway, thumbs up for the Museum of Gibraltar. Where do you go today?
good. Well, oh, I'm meant to be the World Trade Center's opening some financial building.
The World Trade Center?
Or Gibraltar World Trade Center.
I was just going to say, because you're not going to go time travelling. I mean, I feel that was a whole new 20th century sort of experience, really. But
The Gibraltar World Trade Center. But I've had an interesting week. We've had the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association held their 47th Regional Mediterranean meeting on the Rock. We had that. Tim Farron, Lib Dem leader, was meant to come to Gibraltar on Tuesday, but due to the terrorist attack in Manchester, he obviously cancelled
his
visit. So I was meant to be going to that. And what else was there? Well, police recruits passed out yesterday.
That doesn't mean they fainted. They actually sort of moved into the next thing.
No, they had their parade.
I often thought it's very interesting when we hear about police officers passing out. I think surely they should be made of sterner stuff. That's not what Sir Robert Peel set up the thing for. It was to ensure that they continue to sort of be positive, not so, you know, a little bit of heat and suddenly, whoosh, they fainted with the whole thing. It wouldn't do at all. Amazing. It just sounds as though it's all... interesting, you mentioned Tim Farron there. Is there any likelihood that Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn and the other contestants will be making their way to Gibraltar as well? Or is this just a sort of Tim Farron little...
It's very unusual.
Yeah.
Because we don't vote in the UK's elections. So it's a bit unusual for a leader of a political party to visit Gibraltar, especially during election time. Yeah.
Do you not get a vote? Is there not a vote that you can actually cast?
We don't get a vote in the UK. We just vote in our local ones for our chief minister, but we don't ever vote for the prime minister.
Can you vote for the Spanish prime minister? I mean, it's
yeah, we definitely don't get a vote for that.
No, just wanted to clarify that.
but we've also had Shadow Foreign Secretary Emily Thornberry came to Gibraltar a couple of weeks ago. She's from Labour. I spoke to her about it. So there is an interest in Gibraltar to see what how the Rock's going to move on past Brexit. But it was a bit unusual for a Lib Dem leader to decide to come.
Or any leader, to be absolutely honest.
Yeah, any leader.
That's a whole set of circus.
We almost had the Prime Minister, David Cameron, come during the referendum campaign, but he arrived, and on the same day, Joe Cox was murdered.
Exactly.
So he cancelled his rally and arrived in Gibraltar and literally took the next plane out of Gibraltar.
People might be saying there's a connection here, which I'm not even going to
We're all just kind of thinking, why is it that whenever a leader of a party wants to come to the Rock, there's a terrorist attack? Conspiracy theorists will say what they say. I think it's just an unfortunate coincidence.
We could only present the listener with the facts of the matter. Any deductions that are actually made have to take part in their own particular cranial capacities. Anyway, it's 10:30 past 8 o'clock, astoundingly, and I just feel as though, I know Ben's likely to be back next week, but frankly, it's been just a joy just kind of exchanging data across the airwaves. I feel this is a way of actually lifting things forward, and I feel as though I'm revitalised and all set to launch the next programme. But I still have a couple of other things to ask you, Gabriella, one of which is, what musical choice do you think Richard Fitzwilliams would appreciate, given that we're having a kind of Sir Roger Moore tribute? We started it last night, of course. We had Annette Andre, who'd worked with Roger on many episodes of The Saint and The Persuaders and so on. Arthur Weingarten as well had shared the same agent as Sir Roger. Phil Leonis was obviously talking about him. Incidentally, Gabriella, in case you're wondering, the reason Phil Leonis was not with us last week, he was asleep. Mm-hmm. He was unconscious.
What time was it in
It was just after midnight, and he literally had been reminded by Lily Holliman the day after, and he was most apologetic, but I said I'd relay that through the system, and he's okay. He was just asleep. Last night he was lost in a tunnel somewhere in Arizona. It's what happens, really. Anyway, allowing for that, we'll look at Bond themes. Would you think Shirley Bassey and Moonraker, or Duran Duran, A View to a Kill?
Duran Duran.
Really? We're going for his Roger Moore's last outing. I mean, I'm tempted to actually say, did you ever get round to watching the first Timothy Dalton outing, A Living Daylights, which of course features the Rock of Gibraltar? Your response probably will be no.
You know what? Mm. I'm going to get round to it.
Mm.
I just haven't yet, but I promise you,
it's only been what, four years or thereabouts. It's okay.
I'm terrible watching things.
Yeah. Oh well.
I always say I got round to watching Game of Thrones for the first. I think it started 5 years ago, and
There we are. Then you're in the
5 year
routine.
5 years to watch that.
If one thing can be said about your good self, Gabriella, it's that you're not a slave to fashion. You know, the fads of the world, it'll take at least until 2023 before they start really kind of floating the boat from that point of view. So just let them go. That's the important thing. On another case, of course, from our contractually obligated statements, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
Yes, thank you.
And can we look forward to connecting with you again next week?
Definitely, I'll be here.
And you can actually say to your father, I won't ring him by mistake again next week, which is, of course, what I did last week. I did it again today. It's sorry.
You did it today. No wonder it was taking so long to call up.
Yes,
I got worried.
Exactly. It's all very lost in some sort of tunnel. It's all quite surreal.
whatever your views, whatever your thoughts on his role as Bond and so on, and we've discussed that at length, obviously, with Phil Dearness and Annette Andre and Arthur Weingarten last night, I think you have to say that he will leave a legacy of fun and happiness and, of course, step into the footsteps, as he capably did, of Audrey Hepburn to look after UNESCO, a fine soul and another great who's headed off. And that is why, Richard Fitzwilliams, we felt we had to give a little smidgen of View to a Kill from, of course, Duran Duran to welcome you on board this morning.
Well, in fact, I did a few pieces on his sad passing, and one of the things that came across in so much that was said was how likeable he personally was, what he did for charity, and the fact that, you know, he managed to carry one of the most personality, one of the world's most debonair figures, certainly somebody who was devoted to UNICEF, and also who had, though a turbulent private life, an image which was much loved. But I do have to say that whereas it is very funny when one raises one's eyebrow and one is therefore considered as an
in a quizzical manner, Richard, in a quizzical manner.
In a quizzical manner, but when I look back at the Bonds, the great pleasure I got from the Sean Connery ones, I was in South Africa at the time, and a lot of films, well, that I wanted to see, we couldn't. But the Roger Moore type version, one might say, of Bond, these, and I have to be frank, on Turkish television, I said that if you roll these seven Roger Moore Bond movies into one, they just morphed into a single film. I don't think anyone would really notice. And the reason I said this was because they were so plotless. They relied on skimpily clad women. They relied on gadgets. They relied on travelogues. And, of course, Moore was very good with his Bond mots. But the scripts included the likes of Jaws. Whereas I, you know, when I had Stromberg or Scaramanga, Kurt Jurgens and Christopher Lee, respectively, the problem with those movies were that they, for me, they were all, and I have to be frank, terribly, terribly empty. Moore was an absolute charmer. Interesting, his first job as an extra was on Caesar and Cleopatra, which I have actually seen with Claude Rains.
Exactly, and then there was The Robe, and there was Ivanhoe, and so on, and I would disagree, but
on television, mind you, of course, television, he was huge, but I wasn't in the country at the time.
Well, exactly. So we...
what happened was, when he started to try the big screen, you've got Gold, you've got The Wild Geese, and quite honestly, you know, there was an image there that people enjoyed, and absolutely fair dues, but I do feel that when it came to acting...
Richard, we'll agree to disagree. Just step away from that whole moment, because we've got some more exciting news, which is going to be announced thus.
Now back from Madrid, and bringing the best of New Zealand and the Isle of Man to the programme, it's Jessica Ward.
Yes, for 10 whole English minutes, she is back in the studio. Jessica Ward has returned, Richard Fitzwilliams, a day
Hello,
before...
Jessica.
Hello, Richard. How are you?
I am extremely well. It's always nice to enjoy weather. Level we've got in London,
yes.
Sunning myself by the Thames yesterday.
Ooh, nice.
Emails. I mean, that was you know, really pleasurable.
Yeah, it's a real treat, isn't it? I think I'm going to go sunbathe later, I think, make the most out of the weather.
Oh, that is absolutely delightful. And, of course, it's been a week when we've been celebrating 100 years of the Order of the British Empire.
Well, this is the point that we were talking about with Gabriella Peralta a few moments ago, Richard, because I'm just astounded that as yet, unless, of course, protocol prevents them from actually saying anything on air and they've been offered but have turned it down or said, no, we'll just step away, etc., why we haven't had Jessica Ward OBE or, indeed, Gabriella Peralta OBE as yet. I mean, Jessica, it just hasn't happened. Is it probably because of your New Zealand background?
Probably that, I think.
Yeah. I would warn you about mentioning such things on air, that if you were to flag them up, the Honours Committee mightn't necessarily like it.
Uh-huh.
Flag them up on air, that is. However, here is a suggestion. I just throw these thoughts out. That if you were to write to the ceremonial unit of the Cabinet Office, and if you were to gather a large number of well-known and notable individuals who support you and say why...
Jessica Ward deserves an OBE,
absolutely.
Yes.
Take a listen. You see, yes, this is a good idea, because nearly half of the honours, and I mean this is known widely, but nearly half of the honours actually are awarded through links with the members of the public. It dates basically through, because always have done it, but 1993, John Major had what was called the People's Honours. Terrible name, because politicians always like to put the sort of sobriquet but on things. But the facts simply were that people were encouraged to participate. The big changes and the changes to come, if I may briefly summarise, 20 years ago we didn't know, we made the choices, civil servants dominated the system, and now we do. The civil service only dominate part of it, and that's one of the changes I'd like to see. But what you have had is half or even slightly more than half, which is really good news for women. Now, more for persons of colour, more, far, far more, this is the big change, over 70% of honours are linked to some form of philanthropy as well as what has been called the day job. And I think that is good news, but the thing that spoils so much of it, and I can only say that I just wish. I know we've had promises of change, and we've had the Prime Minister make a promise last week of change. Change just doesn't seem to happen in this area. They will choose out of the two honours lists each year, there's the New Year's Honours and the Birthday Honours, and very often you get in this list, and the reporters are looking out for it, one or two names who shouldn't be on any list, almost invariably a civil servant, and somebody who's been absolutely appalling, wasted a lot of money, or been totally incompetent.
Richard, what's wrong with the banking industry? For goodness sake, you know, they deserve every honour they can get, surely.
I wouldn't malign such an industry, but you've just brought me beautifully, Alex, to the second point as to whether there should be change, and that is the Honours Forfeiture Committee. It does act often, and it should act much more often. Fred Goodwin, for example, the former Chief Executive Officer of the Royal Bank of Scotland, was lost a knighthood, but that's so rare. We look at the Sir Philip Breen case and how that was handled. The facts are, if treason, you'd lose it, or if you were in prison over a certain period, that was pretty automatic, but very few others have lost it, and a lot of those who've been honoured have misbehaved in one way or another, and the facts are, I think, that they should be much stricter on that. I wouldn't for a second suggest on this programme that anyone had been honoured since 1925, when it was made illegal, for any sort of contribution to party funds. That's something I wouldn't really...
No, of course not, exactly.
I mean, so nobody should be penalised.
Richard, do you think it's in some sort of investigative journalism scenario here? Just step away from... I mean, Jessica has an exam in a few moments, don't
you? Yeah, trying to get
in the zone. Oh, right, how right you are, because I definitely think we shouldn't go down that route. I mean, the police tried some years ago, and, they got nowhere because there was no evidence. How could there be?
Well, exactly. Talking about politics, it's nice to see that Dwayne Johnson is considering standing for US presidency in 2020, probably 2024. Wow. Because, after all, when you've got the man from Baywatch stepping into the David Hasselhoff shows.
I mean, it's obligatory. We had this with Ghostbusters, in fact, that you had some of the original cast appearing. And there's David Hasselhoff. He's not quite a role. There's Pamela Anderson. And here is a movie directed by Seth Gordon. I happen to have attended, I can't remember why, the press conference for the launch of Horrible Bosses. And Jennifer Aniston, the movie did rather well. And I have to say, I thought it was very, very funny. Baywatch has been absolutely slated by critics.
I was shocked when I saw it on your list of movies to be reviewed. I mean, you know, if Jessica had known beforehand, she would have thought, what? Richard doing a review of Baywatch?
I cover all areas. That's my defence. Well, I review
his defence.
I mean, to me, it looks like A Day in the Life of the Isle of Man. You know, is that a sort of standard scenario there?
Pretty much the same, I reckon.
That whole thing. Will you be checking out Baywatch, Jessica?
I don't know, actually. It looks kind of quite funny.
Yeah, I know. So. I was trying to actually skim through that little piece, Richard, and cut to the quick. No, Karen, share with us. Does Dwayne Johnson do his presidential candidacy, or potential presidential candidacy, any good whatsoever?
Dwayne Johnson is Dwayne Johnson. I saw him as Hercules, and, well, he has the physique for it. Here he plays Mitch Cannon. Coast Guard, of course, the major... Um, head of the Coast Guards on the beach, lots of sun, sand, sea, and all the rest of it here. And he has to take on Matt Brody, who's played by Zac Efron, who was a 2-times Olympic winner, but dubbed the Vomit Comet because he's no team player and he overdoes it, as he does here, of course. Now, I mean, the problem with this movie, there's a baddie played by Priyanka Chopra, who's into drug smuggling and wanting to buy up the bay, and you've got the fight between Johnson's Mitch Buchanan and Efron's Matt Brody, who's not really part of the team. A whole variety of jokes. One of the difficulties of these sort of movies, sometimes movies that are crude can be very funny as well, and sometimes they can be extraordinarily tasteless. Now, there is a scene, I can say no more on Siren, involving Zac Efron and a corpse in a morgue that is unbelievable. It stays with you, and you don't want to see it, and it shouldn't have been in a film of any sort, much less this sort. Really, really, truly, madly, deeply, parts of it are pretty dire. On the other hand, I can't see overall what people got quite so outraged about, because it delivers in the... actresses such as Kelly Roebuck and Alexander Daddario, I knew neither of them. They're there for romantic interest. You've got lots of gags, some funny, some pretty crude. But, I mean, it's cliché following cliché, but what do people who go and see this movie expect and want to see? And, I mean, apart from certainly one scene, which I unfortunately probably never forget, and wish I
think we've seen it on the trailer, actually. Yeah. I know where you're coming from with this particular one, Richard. I'm just... thank heaven.
That, I really don't see what so many complaints have been about. Were they expecting subtlety, for goodness sake?
Well, maybe they were, but then again, you know, if they want that, wait for Wonder Woman in a week or so's time.
Oh, you're right.
Different perspective.
Oh, yes. Or perhaps Snatched.
Well, you see, this is the next one you've actually brought us to, Richard. Before we... I mean, Jessica, Baywatch, will you be having a party to sort of say, let's all go and see Baywatch, then?
No, definitely
not. I thought that
would be hard. Johnson will be very, very disappointed. Of course, Zac Efron, we know his looks. They're referred to every 5 minutes in the film. I wish I had them, but I don't. But the facts are that he does sometimes.
Richard, does he raise his eyebrow in a quizzical manner?
Well, the facts are that his fans will be so busy looking at...
Oh, please. Other pirates.
Probably won't notice. I'm not saying he's the subtlest actor alive. I did see him, however, in Me and Orson Welles, which I thought was absolutely delightful, about Welles in the 1930s and his production of Julius Caesar.
Exactly.
I have to admit, I didn't know of it, and I thought that film was delightful. There was a subplot involving Efron that wasn't the most convincing. Even so, a movie to savour.
Meanwhile, Goldie Hawn and Amy Schumer are back in a team.
See, or I thought Goldie Hawn hasn't been very active for a long time, but used to be one of Hollywood's top comic actresses. We all know that. And for her to star with the delightful Amy Schumer, I mean, this really had potential. The problem is, this is a train wreck of a movie.
He doesn't beat around the bush, does he?
No, he doesn't. Straight to it.
Passes for a story. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be a movie that tells us something about a mother-daughter relationship, or the script somehow. The script can't really decide what it wants. There are a few deaths in this movie, and also there are scenes where you've got the mother and the daughter talking to each other, and sometimes somehow the dialogue is supposed to mean something, which isn't much use, because most of this movie means absolutely nothing at all. Linda, played by Goldie Hawn, the daughter Emily, played by Amy Schumer, they go to Ecuador, and Linda replaces Emily's former boyfriend as she's bought a non-refundable ticket. And unfortunately, viewers of this movie have also bought non-refundable tickets and cannot claim refunds.
Harsh.
Oh, it's harsh, but they're let down by contrived hijinks. The pair are kidnapped. They then escape. The kidnappers keep following them. And one scene, which is silly, follows yet another scene that is silly. And that basically is where we're stuck for 90.
But Jessica, what can I say? He's had lots of weeks of positivity, all that, and then you turn to the show.
You have to balance it out.
Two complete negativities.
But for Baywatch, I didn't say it was a complete negativity. I said those who like that sort of film would probably rather enjoy it. For this, it is a complete negativity because this had
Snatched comes with baggage.
Potential. I didn't think in Baywatch. Baywatch is the television series was popular. We all know this, but here, you've got a patronizing look at Latin America. You've got a tide of self-indulgence, real comic talent, and Goldie Hawn looks fantastic, is totally wasted. And you've got Amy Schumer, who can, be great fun. We know this. But what we have here also is a terrible supporting cast. One of them is a former intelligence operative whose tongue was cut out so she can't tell the enemy anything if they were to capture her. She could always write, of course. But she's dumb. Therefore, unfortunately, all the other characters aren't. And, the script is just awful. There isn't a moment.
I take it, Jessica, you've never considered taking your own mum to Ecuador as a... No.
No, probably not that country. No. Maybe Italy or something.
Would that be Bridget? Brendan.
Bronwyn. That's very close.
There we are. Yeah. We've missed Bronwyn's contributions to the programme. So,
I've missed Bronwyn as well.
Well, thank you. Basically, a sort of thumb middling and definite thumbs down.
Yeah, it's a pity because Goldie Hawn, she really, really looks fantastic. It's good to see her again. Not in this.
Well, there we are. Given Richard's well-known connections with New Zealand, perhaps, Jessica, you'd like to throw those last two questions to him. I know it's been a good few months. In fact, it was September of 2016 when you last asked them, and then you gave us a cake, and then we never saw you again because you were canoeing. But that's okay.
Classic Kiwi, really.
Exactly. Go for it.
Have you enjoyed the show today, Richard?
Oh, I have enormously, and it's been good to chat to you again.
Oh, fantastic. And will we be hearing from you soon?
Oh, undoubtedly you will.
Next week, I presume, then.
I hope so.
I'm sure the Isle of Man will be tuned in, if not for the live part, then certainly for the podcast. It's wondrous. Meanwhile, just for you from Octopussy. All I wanted was a sweet distraction for an hour or two. Had no intention to do things we've done. Funny how it always goes with love when you don't look, you find. But then we're two of a kind. We move as one. We're an all-time high. We'll change all that's gone before.
So there he is, good quality author, working away on his rewrite of his first draft, and suddenly Ollie jumps on the bed behind him and demands a cuddle before his mid-morning nap. 5 minutes taken to settle down, but if he doesn't get settled down, apparently he walks across the keyboard. Is this factually correct, Ian Lennox?
Yes, it's historically correct.
So, that's the critical... I mean, that was 19 hours ago, so we're talking literally yesterday, when if you don't actually respond to Ollie, one, of course, of the pair, Ollie and Obo, they come in twos, of cats that obviously have chosen you as their companion for a few years at least, effectively they demand your attention by having a cuddle before the mid-morning nap, and if they don't get it, they will simply walk across the keyboard, presumably typing out, "Give me a cuddle."
Well, cats are creatures of habit, aren't they? And they have their sleeping place maybe a week, 10 days, and move to somewhere else. At the moment, he likes to sleep in a bed in the front room, which is where I work. And he comes in, he jumps on, he starts meowing on the bed. And if I don't pay any attention to him, he jumps on the table where my computer is and starts, sometimes he sits down, but sometimes he walks about. Mm. And when he walks about, what does he walk on?
Now, is it not just attention?
My keyboard.
Is it not just attention seeking, or are we genuinely? Because it's in my experience that cats actually don't really like cuddles. You know, neither do dogs for that matter. But you know, people give them in any case.
Well, he likes to get his he gets his ears stroked, does Ollie?
Yeah. Well, most cats do.
And he
think.
Bangs his head at you.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's the periods of the day where he's approachable, and others where he doesn't want you to know you. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, so contrary-wise, in essence.
Yeah, well, gosh, like that, yeah.
Yeah, well, the good news, Ian, is once again, Camo was unable to actually make it from Nashville, so you don't have a country music tune to... I know. However, from the we-can't-let-Ian-down front department, you'll be pleased to know that punkabilly outfit Tex Pistols... I'll say that again. Punkabilly outfit Tex Pistols... have actually...
I wonder where they got that name from.
Yeah, it's a tough call, isn't it? You see, I can see all of your journalistic years of experience coming to the fore there, thinking, interesting. And they have done a cover version of There's a Guy Works Down the Chip Shop, Swears he's Elvis. It's obviously covered by Kirsty MacColl. You may have heard of it. It was a very popular ditty when people thought Elvis Presley was indeed working in a chip shop somewhere in Biker. But are you ready... for Tex Pistols and their unique, it has to be said, punkabilly interpretation and indeed incarnation of that classic. I'll say it one more time just to sort of build up the anticipation here as we approach 20 minutes to 9 o'clock. There's a guy works down the chip shop, swears he's Elvis. I was expecting a yes there, Ian, not a complete silence.
Oh, yes, I'm waiting.
Good.
Sorry, I'm waiting.
That's, I know, well, here it comes.
Baby, why'd you talk so fast? Another evening just flew past tonight. And now the daybreak's coming in. So popular, you were the best thing new in Hicksville. With your mohair suits and your foreign shoes, the news is you changed your pickup from Seville. And now I'm lying here alone. You're out there on the phone with some star in New York. I can hear you laughing now. I can't help feeling that's a mile.
With Phil Rambo on lead vocals and Sarah Jane Morris on backing vocals, the CD is available now. It's in support of a very, very, very good cause, and you can go to Facebook Text Pistols UK to find out further details. But I can sense that the assembled listener is effectively keen to find out what Ian Lennox makes of Text Pistols, and there's a guy who works down the chip shop, swears he's Elvis.
It's a bit like those old songs from Lenny Dunnigan, isn't it? My Old Man's a Dustman and stuff.
Does your chewing gum lose its flavour on the bedpost by the night?
Yeah. But his somehow sustained themselves, and I don't think this one does. It starts off as great fun, but it's sort of gradually, so it's got nothing left to say after about a minute or so.
Well, Text Pistols,
I think, anyway, and it's sort of peters out a bit.
Text Pistols, the punkabilly unit in the United Kingdom during the 1980s to the 2000 period, with a monthly residency at London's iconic Break for the Border, and featuring the choice song selection of first-generation rock, country and western and rockabilly classics, the boys were often joined on stage by musicians such as Nick Lowe, Carlene Carter and Paul Carrick. Once again, a reminder that if you go and purchase a copy of their EP, in which, of course, you can hear There's a Guy Who Works Down the Chip Shop, Swears His Elvis, you will be supporting UK prostate cancer research. So there we are. Good stuff there. Right then, Ian, moving dexterously on from that point of view, John Wenham, he, of course, of umpire fame and cricketing delights, had challenges with his own computer in Tuesday of this week, where he was very, very angry with the computer because he just actually got his events diary all set to go when suddenly a cat metaphorically walked all over it and he lost all the work. I'm sharing this because it's the sort of agony that he went through just to actually bring the listener the events guide. Thankfully, within a matter of hours, he managed to redo the whole package and he has produced an event guide so that the citizens of Lincoln can actually know what's happening. There you go. Share that sigh of relief. And I'm going to ask you, Ian, would you like me to share something from the new Lincoln Theatre Royal, the Lincoln Drill Hall, the Terry O'Toole Theatre, or the Palace Theatre, or indeed the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre? Which one of those events or venues would you like me to share with yourself?
The Palace Theatre.
The Palace Theatre. That's the Palace Theatre in Newark, of course. And on Wednesday, the 31st of May, last Wednesday in May, 31st of May, 2:30 p.m, it's the Tap Dancing Mermaid. Say that again. The Tap Dancing Mermaid. I can tell you already intakes of breath as you say, I'm going to have some coffee now just to settle me down. It's important. Join the moon as he tells us the magical, mystical story of a young tap dancer called Marina Skipit, who becomes a mermaid. Combining tap, dance, puppetry, ukulele, and a beautiful story, The Tap Dancing Mermaid by Tessa Mbide is a touching story presented by Pigtails Productions, which will make you want to stick 50 p's in your shoes and join in the fun with the shuffle. I'm not quite sure whether that's something that's unique to Newark, actually. Sticking 50p in your shoes, is that a tap dancing acknowledgement? I don't know. It's suitable for children aged 3 and above. The show runs straight through for 50 minutes. Tickets are mere £11.50. Concessions, £10. And that's a family team of 2 adults and 2 children, £42. Inquiries to the Palace Theatre, Newark, 01636 655 755. So there we are. That's the Tap Dancing Mermaid. Excellent choice, Ian, if I may say so.
Yes, I enjoyed that. A bit surreal.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's face it, Sunderland could do far worse than to employ a tap-dancing mermaid as the successor to David Moyes.
Well, he could always die for the penalty area, couldn't he?
Yeah, so, I mean, are you just, as a Newcastle fan now, just sort of basking in the glory of being the North? And I use that quote deliberately.
No, far from it. Right. I've always maintained that what we really need is the 3 big teams in the area to all to be in the Premier League.
Right.
And we almost got there, but the other 2 let us down. We let them down last season because I think it's just it's as far as the area concerned, it gives it such a huge boost. And anyway, it was not to be.
Well, I mean, there was an event taking place in I think some European country last night. It was Cardiff. That's right, which led to another side from Manchester. I believe they've won another bit of silverware. Really, I suppose that'll please their Portuguese manager. I don't really want to refer to it any more than that. But, What the hay?
Have you won anything this season, by the way?
We have finished 3rd.
Yes, but did he win any cups?
So we have finished in the top 4 for 7 consecutive seasons now, which is the best record.
Do I sense a defensive tone streaking in?
We haven't had a defence for the majority of the season, so how could I possibly have a defensive tone about the scenario?
The goalkeeper problem.
Had it not been for the case that, thankfully, Bravo had an injury which took him out of the rest of the season, and Vincent Kompany managed to return, then I think we'd probably have been finishing in the top 6. But still, you know, good news.
Why haven't you gone for Pickford from Sunderland?
And that's all I can say, really. You know,
The reason I ask is that the manager apparently got rid of Hart because his distribution wasn't the one he wanted. Pickford's distribution is sensational.
Yeah, well, there we are, you see. So who knows what could be happening?
I don't understand
with
it
the Etihad.
Unless he's already got a great goalkeeper in mind, he's after.
Some folk, you know, some things we're not meant to understand, Ian. It's the way it is.
It's beyond my comprehension.
Precisely. How is the book coming on? Have you got any teasers or sneak previews you can provide? Is a case of no, that's up to the cat.
Well, I've written the first draft in a sense. I've got 45,000 words done, but I didn't write to the end because as I've got into the book, it became more and more apparent that certain characters are going to have to change, certain plot lines are going to have to change, and it was going to become more and more complicated if I went on. So I thought the time is now to start again, and so I've done that. And it's much easier writing the second time because you're much more cognizant of the characters and, you know, the plot. Whereas before, you're sort of trying to find your way in a fog, really. The way I do it, anyway. I'm not the sort of person who has a detailed structure of a book before he starts. Mm-hmm. I always remember reading about Anthony Powell, who wrote Dance to the Music of Time. And I think it was 10 books he wrote. And in the first book, the hero goes to a party in the country, and he gets the train back into town and meets one of the fellow guests at the station, and he says, and they were not to meet for another 30 years, and sure enough, 5 books on, they met again. So, I mean, I assume he had the whole thing rough plotted out in his mind.
Well, much
put something like that in, I mean, why, you know, he must have had a good grasp of what he was going to do. To the extent of quite detailed plots.
Much as J.K. Rowling obviously had the entire Harry Potter universe mapped out as well. That's the way she
goes. Did she draw a map?
She did a whole range of things, really.
Oh, really? I haven't studied anything like that.
What was going on in that little coffee shop in Edinburgh while she was developing this magical world? Well, only the
I've got almost respect for her, actually. She came to a really hard time and came to the other side and you know, it's a sort of lesson you get from being a fighter, I think.
And the moral of the story would be, as Churchill himself said, when you're going through hell, the important thing is to keep on going. Or was he referring to Hull, European City of Culture?
Probably
it's
both.
Always a challenge. As you may have gathered, Ian, because I haven't actually gagged any of the Midrick drivers, Jessica Ward was with us earlier. She put in a cameo appearance, but she has headed off to take her very, very last exam. She spoke to Richard Fitzwilliams, but she just had to leave.
Oh, it's the finals, is it?
Well, it's the final, and then that's it. So she will be back in the Isle of Man and probably become telephonic correspondent. But still, that's life. That's the way things go. Ben is out and about sorting out plans for the future and such like. Eva McDonald, she may turn out, we don't know. But I think we've done very well. I think we've done very well coping with life, the universe, and indeed how to ensure that your feline care and authorship is maintained. That's the important thing, because as the old song says, writing is lovelier the second time around. You can use that free of charge if you want to just drop it into dedication or something.
I'll try.
It's a definite thought.
Meanwhile, I might send you a draft of the book, especially the bit that Ollie wrote in Polish.
Nice. See what we did there. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Ian Lennox.
Yes, I have.
There we are. Obviously, there is an Ian Mills. He's a wonderful person, but he's not you. You know, it's very important. You just share the same first name, but other than that, different sort of concepts entirely. So, can we look forward to connecting with you again next week, Ian Lennox?
I do hope so.
Time and time again, I've tried to get back to my hometown. On my mind again, I'm on my way back. Take a look around.